big welcome to the Heritage Council podcast. This year, our podcast will explore the multi-layered experiences which encompass Ireland's past and will also put into context how this sense of heritage is all about our collective experience and why so much that went before still resonates in the present. I hope you enjoy the show. Irish towns seeped in history with stories going back centuries are embedded in the Irish folk memory. In order to preserve this vital part of our ancient past, the Irish Walled Towns Network was established by the Heritage Council in 2005. It exists to help these urban centres become better places to live, work and visit. A walled town is a town that had walls and features like gates, towers and earthen ditches built around it to defend the occupants and to control the flow of people and revenue in and out of the town. They were also seen as status symbols reflecting wealth and influence. While some walled towns date back to the Viking period, the majority date from the Anglo-Norman medieval period. However, there are some examples of towns that were walled in the 1600s. Town walls and their associated features are now recognised as national monuments. Most walled towns have only sections of the walls remaining. However, the circuit of the walls usually mark and define the historic core of the town. In today's podcast, Ian Doyle, Head of Conservation with the Heritage Council, explains the importance of the scheme and why walled towns remain an integral part of Irish life to this day. He also discusses Irish Walled Towns Network grants for interpretation and events projects, which support initiatives that help make the towns a better place to live and also to help raise awareness about the important heritage of the town, which leads to increased tourism and pride of place. Numerous interpretation and conservation projects that the Irish Walled Towns Network has supported have gone on to win awards like Chambers Ireland and Local Authority Members Association Community and Council Awards. On the show, we also chat with Roisin Ingall, Project Manager of the Irish Walled Towns Network, who gives an overview of the All-Ireland organisation with members from north and south of the border. And finally, we chat with Sarah McCutcheon, Executive Archaeologist with Limerick City and County Council and Vice Chair of the Irish Walled Towns Network Committee, who discusses the achievements to date in Kilmallock and Limerick City. On with the show.
A big welcome back, Ian, to the Heritage Council podcast. How are you getting on?
I'm good. Good to be back, Greg.
Yeah, good to see you as well. It doesn't seem too long ago that we were chatting about the Historic Towns Initiative, which is another initiative that falls under your jurisdiction. So for the listener, could you give them a little overview of your role? And you might talk about the Historic Towns Initiative. And of course, today we're talking about the Irish Walled Towns Network and how all those things weave together.
Okay. Well, I think like most people that work in the Heritage Council, sometimes you don't choose heritage, it chooses you. So I remember from my earliest time in school, I was just fascinated with heritage. And I think that was probably helped by two things. I grew up in and around the walled town, the town of Wexford, and I had some inspirational teachers that really pushed the idea of heritage and using the local resource that was around us. So from an early age, I can remember learning walking tours, projects with people like the late Billy Colfer. He was a school teacher there. He went on to do a PhD in Trinity on these things. And we got to know things like the medieval town walls, where the gates were. To this day, I could show you loops, probably built in the 17th century for musket fire in the town walls in Wexford that I was introduced to back then. And when you think about it, it's the kind of place you don't have to think too hard. If Cromwell was there in 1649, some poor individual was probably looking through that loop worried about his fate. So I grew up very much in that kind of context and found my way into heritage, or it found me. And then when I started working in the Heritage Council as an archaeologist in the early 2000s, we were working on a conservation plan for the Kilkenny city walls. And we progressed that, and conservation works on the city walls in Kilkenny, quite significant medieval wall town. We've progressed those works with Kilkenny County Council over the years. But a decision was taken in 2005 to set up a network for walled towns, the Irish Walled Towns Network. And that started with a range of conservation plans for towns that indicated an interest. And in a way, it grew overnight because there was a sense that this kind of heritage, medieval masonry walls, battlements, gun loops, wall walks, was really important, but that it had been neglected. And they're in 56 towns on the island of Ireland that are definitely known as walled towns. But if you talked, around about 2000, if you talked to a town clerk or anybody in a local authority who was responsible for a town, and you asked them, in terms of heritage, what's the biggest question you get asked? They would say to you that frequently somebody stops them in the street or at a public meeting and says, what are you doing about the town wall? It's falling down. So I think for a lot of citizens of Irish towns, they're kind of hardwired. They know that their town was walled. They know that there's heritage, that there's historic fabric there. And there was always a desire to conserve, promote and protect. But that never really happened. But I think the formation of the Irish Walled Towns Network around 2005 changed that.
And what's the story of the network from 2005? How has it developed?
Ups and downs. We started off with some great plans, some large sums for capital conservation works, some lean years then around about 11 and 12, and the years of austerity are in place. We've been growing again since in terms of monies. New towns, always eager to join. So we've 29 member towns at the moment. I know Roisin will go into that in more detail. But I think the track record over that 15, 16 years has been one of placing a focus on just how important this urban heritage is. And it's, in a way, it's a walled towns network. I think the order of the words is really important. It's not just about town walls. It's about the historic core that's within that walled town, the buildings, the grain, the shape, about the medieval heritage. It's track record since then. You can go to walled towns across Ireland now. You can see material walls. We're not on the same level in terms of the survival or the height or the level of impressiveness of places like Dubrovnik. But places like Kilkenny, you can see the wall fabric, you can see the gates, you can see the stretches. Rindoon, an amazing place on Loch Ree. You can see pretty much a town, the curtain wall, the gates, the castle. Clonmel, Athenry, an amazing town. And I know Roisin will go more into that. Its heritage will move more securely. Its wall town fabric will survive more securely into the 21st century. And I think that's been a big achievement.
Yeah, and the fact that it was set up at all is a statement of intent. You know, these are important.
I think when the state says, this is important, we will support you in this, that sends out a really important signal to local government. And we work well in partnership with them, and with the heritage officers, conservation officers on these projects.
Yeah, and that's a little bit of a two-way street, Ian, isn't it? In that it's not like you wave a big flag and towns become part of the network. It has to come from them as well, doesn't it?
It does, but I think the way that the towns responded kind of belies or proves that comment from the town clerk. I think it was the town clerk in Kilkenny around 07 or 08. He was the chair of the IWTN at the time. And he just said, yeah, the question I used to get asked in the street was, what are you doing about the town walls? So there was almost a gap. There was a market need there. And I think we stepped in and we filled that.
And the advantage of it being a network, you know, as opposed to me and Cork, you know, minding my wall, and you and Roscommon minding your wall, etc. What's the benefit of the network? How does that work?
I think we're stronger together. You know, it's that cliche, 2 + 2. It can add up to far more than 4 if we all work together. I know it's a cliche, but I actually believe in it. It's about sharing knowledge, showing off good practice. How do you conserve something tricky? What's a really good way to publicise this for Heritage Week? So, for instance, Mary Mannion, the heritage officer in Galway, really picked up the ball during the COVID period last year during Heritage Week. She figured out how to promote wall town heritage digitally through Facebook, through TikTok, through local radio. And she was so willing to share that information with the other members because that kind of awareness and communication is really important. It's not just about fixing old walls are putting up signs outside old buildings. You have to communicate and share that knowledge, and that's really the added value. So I think that's the benefit of a network, just sharing and promoting good practice and training as well.
Could you tell me about that interesting book you had in your hand a few moments ago?
That's the Avril Thomas, the two-volume work, The Walled Towns of Ireland. She was a researcher, I think a geographer, I think, by background, but she did this amazing two volumes on walled towns of Ireland, looking at where they came from, the nature and the evidence, and just distribution maps. But the second volume is really the fascinating one, because it takes every town, puts in the maps, maps out the historical references, and describes the circuits. So that's been an invaluable resource for the IWTN. And we use that whenever we look at conservation projects. It's a starting point for conservation plans and for anybody new that is interested in joining the network.
Yeah, and each wall, of course, was built for a purpose.
See, the purpose is really interesting. You know, when I was a kid, I thought it was always to keep the baddies out. Fire arrows, you know, when you're a child, molten tar, all of that interesting stuff. It's actually just a brilliant way of taxing country people coming into the town. They want to sell hides, grain, anything. You levy the tax. So it's about self-government. It's about a town saying, this is our space, this is our market, this is our autonomy. Now, of course, they fulfill the defensive role as well, but they're bounded towns. And even to this day, if you look at crests of towns, think of Dublin with its three castles. That's just the one I can think of straight away. They generally feature the town walls. So I think the idea, the imagery, the iconic sign of a town wall is hardwired into local government. It's an expression of local government and independence, taxation, who was a resident of the town, who had voting rights. So it's part of our democratic inheritance as well. And even to this day, they sometimes mark out what's a parish boundary in a medieval town, the flow of streets, property boundaries. So they're a huge and powerful inheritance from the past, and they're a really important part of our historic town cores. What you see in the medieval period as well is muirage grants. So you have a walled circuit, or you want to build one. So you petition the king, the crown in London, and these are primarily an Anglo-Norman phenomenon. And you get the right to levy taxes and tolls. And we know what they were levying those taxes on. It might be a penny on every load of straw or sheep. And that was how you financed the construction of town walls. Now, of course, there was skullduggery, there was fraud, but that was how you financed it. And sometimes that evidence of a muirage grant it starts you off, well, where is the town wall? It must have been here, or was it built at all? But it's good evidence. And Avril Thomas, she's very good. She sets out most of the evidence for those muirage grants, because it's an important indicator of it.
And for anyone with a lot of interest in this area, Ian, where can they go to get information?
The Irish Walled Towns Network website is a good starting point. Archaeology.ie has all the mapping as well. And then your local library or the Heritage Council website as well.
Yeah, and I had a quick peep at the website, and I think from there you can access the Heritage Council maps. But it's an all-Ireland initiative as well, so it does include towns in Northern Ireland as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're really lucky. We have Carrickfergus and Derry as members of the network, both two really impressive walled towns.
Brilliant. Ian Doyle, thank you so much for filling the gaps for everyone. I'm looking forward to chatting to you again.
Thanks, Greg.
Take it easy. Thank you, Ian.
Next, we hear from Roisin Burke, Project Manager of the Irish Walled Towns Network.
Roisin Burke, a big welcome to the Heritage Council podcast. How are you keeping?
I'm keeping very well. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on today and giving me the opportunity to talk about the Walled Towns Network.
Because you're the program manager, isn't that right?
Yep, the project manager. I've been project manager of the network since late September 2019. So really enjoying the role. It's a big role. We have 29 Walled Town members right across the island of Ireland. From Derry all the way down to Youghal. So there's a lot of fantastic towns, a lot of great people working in the scheme and really enthusiastic about the scheme. So it's a great project to be working on.
So you're responsible for a lot of walls.
Well, responsible is a big term. But yes, I'm very interested in a lot of walls around the country, yeah.
Can you explain to me your role and how the network works in a very practical way?
Yeah, so the network was set up in 2005 by the Heritage Council to try and coordinate, I suppose, the efforts of local authorities across the country to preserve, conserve and enhance historic wall towns and features. Because I guess there was a sense that you know, these are hugely important features in our townscape, but they were suffering a little bit, I suppose. And this network then was formed to try and help local authorities and then as well community groups to get involved in the protection and promotion of them. And over the years, there's been fantastic projects in a lot of towns around the country where they've not only conserved them, but turned them into amenities for the community that are living around them and for visitors coming to the towns as well.
So what benefits does the network bring to each of the individual members?
So I suppose being part of the network, first of all, you're part of a network. As I said, there's 29 members. So there's a great sense of collegiality, I suppose, there and of learning from each other. Some towns are further down the road with conservation or interpretation than others and have shown the way, I suppose, of where you can go with developing projects like that Sarah is going to talk about later on in Kilmallock. So we can all learn from each other. There's also a grant scheme that the IWTN runs, and member towns can apply for grants for conservation projects for their walls or features in the wall town as well, because it is a wall town organization rather than just town walls. So we also, you know, would fund conservation for historic features within the town and interpretation of those features and the town walls. We also run training programs. Right now, they're online. We're in the middle of running a digital heritage skills webinar for our network members. And at the end of May, we'll have a webinar about valuing volunteers and how to build capacity in community groups. So we look at providing training opportunities for our members and publish guidance documents as well.
When I heard about it first, I thought it was some initiative that worked with the local authorities around the country. But you mentioned volunteers and community groups. So who's leading the charge on all of this?
You know, every town is unique and takes a unique approach to how they look after the walls and the features in the town. Some will have a big input from community groups who'll be leading the way. Other towns will have will be led by local authority representatives. So it just depends on the town and the resources that are there.
Yeah, and you were saying to me that 2019, your plan was to hop in the car and zip around the country to visit the people, I guess, and the physical towns themselves. How many have you got to at this stage?
I don't know. Not as many as I want to. But hopefully, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel now. So hopefully we'll be able to get back out visiting. And especially, I'm very anxious to start visiting conservation projects that we'll be funding over the summer as well.
Obviously, your window since September 2019, and maybe even a bit before that. What kind of work stands out to you within the network in the recent past?
Work that we've undertaken in the network?
Yeah, in the last few years, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, the network, because it's been established since 2005, it's grown since then. Now we're up to 29 members, but if people are interested in joining, we're always interested in having that conversation with new town members too, if I can just get that plug in there. But work that we've carried out, you know, as you said, COVID kind of threw a big spanner in the works. So we wanted to continue to linking the network and, you know, keeping people up to date with the news. So one of the things that we started doing was to put out this online magazine called The Walltown Crier. So it's a bi-monthly magazine. It comes out every 2 months and it just features news from around the network. And actually, I've just sent out the April edition there earlier on today. So that's a great way of showing what's happening around the network, picking a couple of examples of say interpretation projects, conservation projects to show what can be done, but also of different grants to tell network members about different grant schemes that are happening or different things that they can get involved with. And in each edition, we put a feature on a Walltown member because it's a great way of just showing what's, you know, just down the road all around the country. There are 56 known walled towns right around the country. So there's, you know, they're fantastic places to visit. So we really do want to put spotlights on them. We also then last year when COVID hit, everybody was, you know, stuck at home. Kids were being homeschooled. So we saw there could be an opportunity there to maybe produce something to get the word out to younger age groups about walled towns. So we put together a children's workbook with lots of different challenges and activities in it to help just promote, you know, how walled towns evolved, and to also promote some of the great reconstruction drawings and different features of interpretation that have been produced over the years.
I saw that on the website and I was really interested. I thought that was a very clever initiative to get young people engaged, because you hear the words walls and you hear the words walled towns, but really it's something that carries a story about each place, and those stories are rich and gold, and it's part of who we are and that pride of place. I was chatting to Ian Doyle earlier. He had Avril Thomas's book about the towns. I think that's like the Bible of Irish walled towns, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And actually, just to pick up on a point there that I just said earlier, you know, we do have 29 members, but there are 56 proven walled towns, according to Avril Thomas's book. So if a town is interested in joining the network, the first thing to do, I suppose, is always to check whether you're living in a proven walled town. And a really handy way of doing that is to go onto heritagemaps.ie, which is a fantastic resource run by the Heritage Council. They have a data set on the Heritage Maps under archaeology that shows where all those proven walled towns are across the country. So if anybody has an interest in sort of exploring the option of joining the network, that's the first thing I'd say to do, is to have a look at heritagemaps.ie, and then get in touch with myself, and I'm happy to talk to anybody about their application.
Yeah, so if I'm in a town and I've realised that it's a walled town, and that for some reason we're not on the list, and I'm interested in my heritage and getting the story out there, what would happen if I sign up for the network? What do I need? You know, how involved do I need to get? What's that whole process like?
So to sign up to the network, it does need to be on the list of a walled town. So as I said, there's 56 of those proven ones. There's another 35 that are unproven. So that would mean that maybe there's just a reference to a muirage grant, which is a grant given to help build the wall. Or there might be some sort of contemporary historical description of a bit of wall or a wall town proposal. So if you're in a situation where it's a town like that, then the case it's to get in touch with me, have a chat with me. But I would stress that walled town network applications are a partnership between the local authority and a community group. So it can't really just be a community group coming to us. They have to have the support of the local authority to get involved in the network, because local authority and community group both fill out the application form together and then send it in. And we have a committee called the IWTN Management Committee, which oversee the work that I do and the direction of the walled town network. So the application will go to them for review as well.
Okay, because I know we're chatting to Sarah McCutcheon later, and yeah, I think she will take us through step by step of the work that happened in Kilmallock in Limerick, which would be really interesting just to see how that process worked.
And
walls and walls around our cities. But from town to town, what was the history there? Why are we seeing walls around so many of our towns?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, the walls mean so many different things to different people today. And it was probably the same back through the centuries. But walls started being built in the Viking Age. And then a lot of our towns were walled in the Anglo-Norman time. So I suppose it's a sense of within and without, you know, and defense and protection are also a great way of managing the flow of people into a center of commerce. And if you can manage the flow, then maybe you can put a little bit of tax on the people coming in as well. So it's a good way of generating some revenue there too. But walls continued to be built up into the 17th century. For example, Bandon was walled in the 17th century. So I suppose it's a pattern of waves of people coming into the country and settling in areas and then looking to protect those areas and to monetize that protection as well.
Do you have some towns on your list that you'd love for them to join?
Yeah, I do, for sure.
Anyone who's listening, there must be, you know, towns that have a good wall footprint that should be in the network. Do any come to mind for you that you'd love to see as part of the network?
Yeah, there would. I mean, but it's not just about the wall either. It's about what the community group and local authority want to achieve as well as part of the network. You know, what are their plans to help to conserve and to promote and protect what they have there? So, you know, I might have some walls that I'd be eyeing up there for sure, but you know, you have to see what's behind that as well, because it is a bit of commitment to join the network. So that commitment has to come from the community and the town itself. We can't bring that on for them. So there's certainly ones out there, that'll be great to see join.
Yeah, you're not going to give me names, are you?
Not going to give you names. I'm not going to do that. No, not at all. I don't want to put pressure on anyone. But if anybody's interested, definitely just give me a call or send me an email or get in touch with the Heritage Council and I'd be delighted to talk to them.
Yeah, because I'm sure like that, Roisin, that there's probably people in towns. They're very enthusiastic about where they live, a pride of place. They've realised that they're not part of the network and they're not sure why. And maybe the first step might be a call to yourselves just to see what the possibilities are.
For sure, for sure. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it's a partnership with the local authority as well. And there is a fee to join the network too. And that's an annual fee. So, you know, that needs to be discussed with the local authority who cover that fee. So, as I said, there's a commitment there when you join the network. But, you know, for towns that have been part of the network, there's been great benefits to them. The first thing we always start off with when a town joins is to carry out a conservation management plan for the walls, but how they can be what are the conservation requirements and what are the urgent requirements. So that's a great basis to start off, you know, with the plan, and then we can start doing the work piece by piece over the coming years then. And that's why it's so important that we have our grant scheme there as well to be able to support that work.
And I know COVID stopped you in your tracks a little bit. Have you a plan for the next few years?
Well, the plan would be, I suppose, to continue to work on the network and bringing the network together and offering opportunities for the network to come together and to continue to keep every member in the network up to date with what's happening. And to continue to support the great projects that are taking place around the country. I mean, we had some fantastic grants in last year, and the responses of a lot of the towns to the COVID pandemic was you know, it was really, really good and really inspiring. We had festivals, you know, part of what the network does is it supports medieval town wall days or medieval festivals. And some of our festivals moved completely online. And it was so inspiring to see people just respond really quickly to the pandemic and to be able to put all of this fantastic content online. So I'm really looking forward to continuing to work with the towns to see what they develop over the coming years.
Yeah, and we've had a wild Atlantic way. Do you think we'll have a walled towns tourist trail?
I would love to see that. Yeah, absolutely love to see that. And to have the flag flying across our 29 or more members. Yeah, it'd be really great. Yeah,
and it would be a nice hook to history and heritage and everything else, wouldn't it? A nice way to get people engaged.
Absolutely. And I know in previous podcasts, you were talking about things like the Historic Towns Initiative and the heritage-led regeneration that's going on in a lot of towns. And it's such an important thing to continue to support. And you know, people are coming here from across the world and they see towns, town walls that are stretching back 800 years and our streets and everything. It's all coming from, you know, the fact that it's walled, the street layout is then following on from that. And it's just this living history that that's all around us. It's tangible, and it's a great hook for people. So, you know, it is really great to be working on a scheme that supports the conservation and protection and promotion of that.
Yeah, and I think the minute towns realise the benefits of it and how they can leverage it in a very positive way for their communities, and you'll have a lot more people picking up the phone and sending you emails and everything else.
Yeah, and we've great examples of that, you know, and now that there's talks of the inter-county ban being lifted, I definitely urge people to get out and to visit some of our great walled towns around the country, because, you know, there's great days out to be had by visiting them.
So in a COVID-19 world, the walls would have kept people in, so it might have been very handy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Stephen Donnelly would have been thrilled, but now in a staycation world, you know, let's go and visit our walled towns around the country.
Yeah.
If someone wants to get in touch with you directly, what's the best way to go about it?
Yeah, they can email me directly at irishwalltownsnetwork@abarsaheritage.ie. We also have a contact form on the irishwalltownsnetwork.ie website, so people can fire me over an email there as well.
So I'm going to ask you a very mean question now.
I know what it is. I don't think I can answer it.
What do you think I'm going to ask you?
What's my favourite wall town?
Yeah, it's like, you know, which is your favourite child?
Yeah, well, I've only one, so it's easy to answer that.
Yeah, but, well, thankfully, there's no confusion
29,
there.
I don't know, 29, yeah. I couldn't possibly say, you know, especially because I'm from Tipperary, we've got four wall towns in the network. So, I mean, I couldn't possibly say. They're all unique in their own special way.
That's terrible. Is that the best you can do?
That's absolutely the best. Sorry.
But, yeah, I'm sorry, but putting you under that pressure with that question, Roisin.
I'm not going to crack.
Roisin, thanks a million for coming on the Heritage Council podcast. Thank you, and I'll chat to you again soon.
Thanks so much, Greg. Thanks, William.
Yeah, thank you.
In our final segment, we hear from Sarah McCutcheon, Executive Archaeologist with Limerick City and County Council, about how the Irish Walled Towns Network made such an impact in the town of Kilmallock.
A big welcome to Sarah McCutcheon to the Heritage Council podcast. How are you keeping, Sarah?
I'm very well, and lovely sunny day. Lovely to see you.
I know, thankfully. And I've discovered, even though you're in Limerick, that you're a Cork woman. So a big thumbs up already for that one.
Yes, and there's plenty of walled towns in Cork, in County Cork as well.
Yeah, and I know in your native town, in Bandon, mm-hmm. That's one of the walled towns, isn't that correct?
It is, and Botevant and Cork City.
And of course, you drive to Botevant, but I don't think you do actually. Do you cheat Botevant on your route? Okay, you go through Botevant.
No, I do.
Yeah, well, but the roadworks, you have loads of time to enjoy the walled town, I think. Are there still roadworks there? I hope not.
No, the roadworks are over for a long time, but as an archaeologist, I greatly appreciated driving through the town because they had fantastic finds.
But you're right, it is a beautiful town. So if I'm correct, you're the local authority archaeologist with Limerick City and County Council.
Absolutely correct.
And I know already we've spoken to Ian Doyle from the Heritage Council about the Irish Walled Towns Network. And we've also spoken to Roisin Burke, who's the programme manager for it in Ireland. And when it's Ireland, it's all Ireland, of course. So if we get a little bit granular, you know, in my town or your town or someone else's town, how does that evolve? How do we see this work going on in practice on the ground? What does it actually mean?
It means a lot of things, and it means different things to different people. And it depends on the degree of preservation of the town defences for a start, because that obviously is very often the initial focus of the work. So if I just use Kilmallock as an example, I have represented Kilmallock since 2005, if Kilmallock was a founder member, and I represent Limerick City now as well. But Kilmallock has a huge amount of its wall standing. And Limerick County Council at the time was very well aware of the heritage value of Kilmallock and had instituted a very good public realm plan back in the noughties. But the wall remained really inaccessible. It was at the back of people's properties, and there was private owned land on the exterior. So it wasn't visible, it wasn't tangible, and it wasn't part of people's everyday life. The people who lived in the main street, They had long, lovely long gardens like the original Burgage plots. But they knew the wall was at the end, but they were, and they liked it, and they were proud of it in their own way, but they were also fearful of it because it was crumbling. It was particularly badly affected on the interior where it had been robbed out. So they tended to sort of let their garden go wild at that end. So one of the first things we did in 2007-08 is that we put together a conservation and management plan. And that meant, because of the nature of the study, there was a great deal of public engagement. So we talked to everybody who adjoined the wall. We had public meetings. We had meetings with business people. So everybody knew what was going on. We had a steering committee that had a lot of people from the council, a lot of people from the town. And so we talked through a lot of the issues, and the conservation and management plan then developed and was delivered. And in tandem with that, there was a second public realm plan sponsored through the Heritage Council and the Irish Wall Towns Network, and it focused on Camalc as a walled town. We had had, prior to the urban renewal in the noughties, there had been public realm plans, but they didn't focus on it as a walled town, and this one did. And that public realm plan was very useful, and it fed hugely into our local area plan for Camalc. So there was a real push from a statutory basis that the wall would be protected, and that it would be incorporated into all planning decisions. So that was one stream. So the second stream was people just engaging with the wall and the idea that there would be funding available to do capital projects on dangerous parts of it and parts that were falling. And then there was another arm whereby we started organizing festivals to engage with people who maybe didn't even live in the town bounds, but were adjoining it. So there was strata like that, and it was developed through having photographic competitions with the primary schools and schools, various issues. Like at the very start, we tried to do a bell ringing across the 32 counties on one Sunday morning, you know, that it was to ring out the bells in the walled towns. That was an early idea. There's been lots of different things done in walled towns all around the country. A particularly lovely one, I think it was Drogheda did it. They got people to join arms all the way around the line of the town wall.
Good.
Yeah, it's lovely. You know, there's been lots and lots of different interactions, reimagining. And then for towns, for example, that don't have a lot of standing remains, there's been a lot of, in more recent times, interpretive plans to try and protect the line of the wall, views of the wall, and to interpret the wall visually and in the public realm. Those kind of things.
And the initiative in the town, my understanding is, this has to be driven by the community and then they engage with the local authority. Is that how it worked?
No. Initially, the move from the Heritage Council was to engage with local authorities. Very much it was local to local authorities, but local authorities and communities are intertwined anyway. So there is no organisation that has so much communication with local communities than its local authority. And more every day through sports initiative, arts initiative, you know, all of that. We're totally intertwined. But really, the initial push and the initial setup was to make sure that local authorities recognised what they had in their own jurisdiction, because they were making planning decisions and they had it in their gift to do the protection of the wall. So it was most important that it was through a local authority. But some communities sort of went ahead of their local authorities. But generally, it's a twin track organisation.
Do we know the history of the wall in Kilmallock?
We do. We are so lucky in Camalc because we have a huge amount of material. It was a monastic foundation and then developed, I think, possibly by the Bishop of Limerick. And we certainly know that there was a ditch and defences in the 13th century and certainly probably a stone wall by the late 13th century. And of the 1,700 metres perimeter wall that eventually evolved, we have standing about 1,200 metres.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And where it's missing, it's still represented by a boundary line. So the wall is completely visible. Now, what's been great in Camalc was early on, we organized a two-day conference, which raised the profile of Kilmallock within the local authority as well, because several of them attended, and politicians. And that's important to build, you know, that sort of ethos and recognition of the importance. So that was a building block. Then we started doing year on capital works to the wall, because on the west, for example, we have about 500 meters of the town wall, and most of it was in reasonably good repair on the outside, but there was a long section where there had been falls as recently as the 1990s, which was a shame, you know, that this wasn't around by then to stop that. So we worked away piecemeal for 10 years. And then we got a couple of big shots in the arm, because we, through the Wall Towns Network, we were producing plans and ideas and working towards an ultimate goal of having a walkway all the way up along the west wall. We were actually in a position that we were ready when bigger grants came along, let's say for the rural economic development zones, the town and village. And then very big was the Historic Towns Initiative in 2018, which enabled us to finish all of the non-urgent works to the wall. And so by 2019, we had a 5-acre park on the outside of the town wall. We had over 500 metres of the town wall completely conserved. And we had a 576-metre walkway going from one end of the town wall to the other. And then also we had in train plans for an east walkway that comes down half the length of the wall, so which we call our Priory Walk. And so thankfully, when COVID hit, Kilmallock was endowed with wonderful walkways. We have nearly 5 kilometres of walkway around the town in the immediate environs of the town. So they're going to be very fit people.
Yeah, so we had a wall with some great history that I think what you're explaining to me is something that no one really fully appreciated. It was in disrepair at different points. It was backing onto people's gardens. There was no sense of identity around it. So when the work commenced, I'm sure there was a big rising curve of improvement. Was there a community benefit to match that improvement to the wall and that people realizing the importance of it and the preservation of it? I presume there's an attitude that nearly goes with the physical work.
Yes, I think it's been, I can only say from little small vignettes that I've encountered, people have come up to me and just said, thank you very much, that they are so proud of their wall now. And that makes everything worthwhile, I think. And also one of our senior people, when we were opening the wall walk, it was very gratifying to me. He turned around to me and he said, you know, Sarah, all through the last couple of years, I thought it was all about the walkway, putting in the walkway. And he said, but today I actually realized it's actually all about the wall. And that meant a huge amount to me, I must say.
Yeah. And it really is all about that pride of place and that sense of identity and giving people a focal point.
And ownership, because now they can go right up to the wall. They can see it in their everyday lives and they're seeing the best side of it as well.
So, Sarah, in terms of your work, because I know you're an archaeologist for Limerick City and County, how does it fit into your kind of bigger agenda?
I think it's very important. I think archaeology needs to pay back. There's a lot of money spent in archaeology with excavations because it's obviously an expensive process and it's detailed and it's very worthwhile. Our subsurface archaeology is finite and it's fragile and we have to look after it. But on the other hand, I think archaeology can give a huge amount. It can give that sense of place, and it often is apolitical. So everyone can own it, no matter if you've just arrived into a community or if you are 4 generations in a community. If something is discovered out in the field, then everyone has a pride in it and everybody has a stake in it. So it's been wonderful for me. I've worked in several wall towns, in excavations in wall towns, including Waterford City, and it was a huge experience. It's a very gratifying. It's a more tangible archaeology than prehistoric, and it's easier for people very often to relate to, because actually, apart from the computer age and the combustion engine, an awful lot of what we use as tools today don't differ hugely from medieval times. So there's a, it's a much easier step to make for people to understand.
Well, Sarah McCutcheon, thank you so much for bringing the whole Irish Walled Towns Network to life for me. I'm looking forward to meeting you in Kilmarnock at the wall, and we might go for a stroll and you might chat to me about some of the other things you do in your role.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Take it easy. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Heritage Council podcast. For more information about our projects and programs, our work with others and our publications, please check our website, heritagecouncil.ie. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram or LinkedIn, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. See you again soon.